Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in to our broadcast. This is Henrik Palmgren, and we are coming to you from the west coast of Sweden in Scandinavia. We have a new program available for you on Sundays and Thursdays. Talk radio on important topics with interesting guests for your consideration. We have our regular guest Alan Watt back with us on the program today. Alan spends some time with us once a month to talk about important subjects varying from mythology to history, conspiracy and the New World Order, and so much more that he covers over at his website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com. Welcome back to the program, Alan. Great to have you on the line again.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on. Yeah.
Great. What's been going on over at cuttingthroughthematrix.com since we last spoke? You're keeping busy, I see.
Yeah, I've got more shows coming up. And
definitely. You do like almost once every day, I guess, or not a radio show perhaps, but you're definitely putting up your, with your audio blurbs that you put up there, I guess it's one every day, I guess.
Yeah, pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. Keeping busy to keep an eye on what's going on in the world and just trying to track it all. It's a full-time job, as it were.
Yeah, I try not to get waylaid by the details, because when you know the big agenda, you don't have to wait to see what politician introduces what bill. You know they must do these things, and the politicians are interchangeable. So these plans were laid down a long time ago. You know the agenda, and you expect all these laws to come to pass as they go on their way.
Yeah, speaking of the agenda, I have to ask if you heard about the recent developments over here in Europe. You know, we got ourselves our own Council on Foreign Relations, as it were, the ECFR, they call it.
That's right.
I'm not jealous of the US anymore, you know.
No, now you have one too.
Isn't it great?
We're all equal. We're all equally under the totalitarian propaganda rule.
That's right. And seems to be they're modeling the EU after the US in that sense very much. Probably in the future years to come here, they're probably going to bring in a president like they have over in the US to, you know, not watch over it all, but be the puppet, as it were, of it all, you know?
Well, Karl Marx talked about it, remember, in the 1800s. You'd have a united Europe with the Scandinavian countries included, and you'd have a united Americas, that would be the second one, and then there'd be the Pacific Rim conglomerate as well. Three massive trading blocks, each with a provincial government. So the national government becomes provincial under a super world government. And, well, here it all is, and voila, it's all coincidence, eh?
Exactly. I mean, my mind goes back to basically the Holy Roman Empire. I mean, the EU, when they had this constitution that was signed back in October 2004, this was, of course, subsequently thrown out by the Dutch and the French by votes in 2005, but when they signed this treaty or the constitution, this was basically in front of this colossal statue of Pope Innocent X. And this reminds me, draws my mind back to the Holy Roman Empire. That's what I see as the model here, basically.
Yeah, well, these characters, especially the Council on Foreign Relations, which is just, remember, all non-British Commonwealth countries has a department. They have their own department. They have them, and they're called the Council on Foreign Relations. In Britain, it's called the Royal Institute for International Affairs, and that's the parent, that's the big granddaddy that runs all the CFRs, the Council on Foreign Relations groups. Now, they came out of the Rhodes Scholarship Program for World Government, based on a British model, the British Empire, and Cecil Rhodes set up the Rhodes Foundation for scholarships, who would pick the, not so much the brightest people, but bright enough, but also who are involved in social issues at university, and they would be promoted for world leadership. And they merged with the Alfred Milner, Lord Alfred Milner Group, the Round Table Society, and they became the nucleus for this world system. They also were the ones who put forward the League of Nations, and then the United Nations, they helped draft up the constitutions for them. So it's the same group, you see, based on free trade trading regions or blocks under a super world government. This is all their agenda. And you're going to remember that even in Sweden and Norway and Denmark, they've had Rhodes Scholars being sent over for years, trained. And when they come out of the Rhodes Scholarship program at Oxford University, they go back to their own countries. Doors are opened for them, and they shoot to the top. They're not only up in politics, but they're inside the bureaucracies, which are perhaps even more important. So you've had them for years working towards this system.
Okay, Oxford University, you say. I've heard that a lot of the professors and so forth on Oxford, I don't know if Cambridge also is involved, are kind of these high-level socialists, or actually referred to as the Fabians. Do you know if this is,
true? Yeah, what they did was they branched out from the Rhodes and Milner Foundation, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, and they looked at the categories of society from the upper, middle, and lower classes, and they set up a particular society, a subgroups that would lead each section of society. And so for what appeared to be initially for the working people, they gave them the Fabian Society. So they became the top labor leaders, and they also were put in charge of big unions and so on. But in reality, they were all part of the CFR, or Council on Foreign Relations.
There we go. And I think Billy Clinton is one of those high-level guys that were, he was a Rhodes Scholar, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. So was Pierre Trudeau of Canada, who became Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
And Pierre Trudeau, it's quite amazing that the man was the head of the Comintern Party, that's the International Communist Party. And he led the delegation from Canada, young communists, in 1952. And yet, years later, he ran to become Prime Minister of Canada, and not one single newspaper mentioned that fact, which they all knew.
Huh, there we go.
And he became Prime Minister of Canada. He started the national debt rolling off. He pushed integration, the multicultural idea, and then started the ball rolling into integration for the Summit of the Americas.
There we go. Do you know if Rhodes... the scholarship still is around to this day?
Oh, yeah. They pick them every year.
Really?
And still send them. That's the premier foundation for picking and training world leaders, not for countries, but for the world integration.
Yeah. Do you know if Blair is involved in this also, Tony?
Well, we know that Tony went to Oxford. He was an Oxford man. He was groomed at Oxford. And I'm still waiting now that he's left his main position, because the press always afterwards tells you more about the prime ministers and who they really are. Up until now, we don't know who this man is. We know he went to Oxford University. We don't know anything about his lineage, his parentage, or anything else. And that's still a big mystery. But one day they'll eventually tell us, and he'll be related to the right people, you'll find.
Exactly, definitely. And I guess the other one going in over there right now, Gordon Brown, is just... It's interesting that they always put in, but in most cases, the finance minister that has been under the former president or prime minister, when he leaves, they get the finance guy up there. That's happened in Sweden many times also. Do you have any idea why that might be a strategy for them?
Yeah, because we're run by economics, basically, and the banking boys and fraternities are high up there in placement of prime ministers, etc. They want someone that knows the con game of banking, which is just a big con game, and compound interest, debt, taxation, the system. And in other words, the whole system, which is a form of slavery, it keeps us all under the big fist. And they need someone who understands the cons, who'll go up there and sign everything he's told into law.
Well, that's right. I don't know if it was the inaugural speech of Gordon Brown or if it was a speech that he did before he was officially put in as the Prime Minister of Great Britain. But in this speech, I don't think you could squeeze in the words New World Order and New Order more in a speech to actually make it just contain of those words,
there's no doubt. See, we're under a complete integrated, well-organized, well-connected, interconnected system here of what appears to be different groups, but in reality, it's just a pyramid of groups all taking their orders from the same head. And it's been a push, a dream of theirs, this world utopia, for a long, long, long time. A utopia for them, that is, for the elite.
Yeah.
And they've written about it since the French Revolution fairly openly, that eventually they'd have war after war. And if they could simply speed up the process of creating wars and bringing the synthesis out of them and the treaties that come out of them, which means further integration, bigger empire building, eventually you join all the empires together. It's like a three or four chessboard games going on at the same time, and eventually those boards get put on the big board and we're all integrated together. This is their strategy.
Mm-hmm. This reminds me again, if we go back to the EU, for instance, and we've been talking about this connection with the biblical connection, I guess we could say, because very interesting correlations between, if you look at the EU, the parliament in Strasbourg, the building itself,
yeah.
It is very similar to a painting that a guy called Peter Bruegel did back in 1563, and this is kind of a famous image of the Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Have you seen the correlation between the building in Strasbourg and this painting? Have you seen those?
Yes, I have.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is amazing, and it's also the old used to call it the Invisible College. This allegorical type image in the mind of this round tower-type structure that the Rosicrucians brought out in the 1500s. And those artists in those particular days were members of the Rosicrucians. You'll find a lot of occultic meanings within their artwork.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah, but because, again, they had the an ad connected with this image. If you look at the Strasbourg building, that is very similar, of course, but then they have an ad. I think this was back in the 70s, actually. Or maybe later, an ad for Europe, basically, and it was called, one of the text on the poster basically was Europe, many tongues, one voice.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, it goes right back to Tower of Babel and the one language that everyone had, you know, at the beginning.
Yep.
So
and in the 1500s, the Rosicrucians, Francis Bacon, and John Dee, and others, said that they were creating the international language of the future, which would be English, and it is the international business language of the present.
Hmm. Could we connect this with the commandments on the Georgia Guidestones, maybe? Have you heard about this?
Oh, yeah, that's the same thing. And a Christian Rosenkreuz, which is a Rosencross,
yeah.
Or Rosicrucian, that's all it means. And the Rosy Cross has always been a symbol of the higher occult, where those with spirit, mean themselves, in other words, would guide the world into this final utopia that they'd planned, but they also want to kill off, because they do believe in eugenics very, very strongly. They believe in breeding, good breeding. Not a new idea. It's been there for centuries and centuries and centuries. In fact, the Old Testament is nothing but begatting and who marries who. It's eugenics. And so eugenics has always been involved with the superior types and the inferior types according to themselves, and they want to kill off the useless eaters. And that's why we live in an economic system which is theirs, the psychopathic system, and therefore the system that's coming in, they don't need all those workers to service the world and make and produce things. Therefore, they want to eliminate what they call the useless eaters, as Lord Bertrand Russell called them.
Going back a little bit to the Bible again, reminds me when you're talking about the breeding and the eugenics of it all, that that this is has to do actually with the bloodlines, or even the line of I don't know if I should say Cain, because that's probably the wrong idea here, but I tie this together with the idea of the punishment after, you know, again, the tree in the Garden of Eden and all this, that The death actually was something that was put on man, or a sin that was put on man because of the thing that happened in the garden with the fruit, tree of knowledge, and all of this. Do you think that there could be some kind of a more esoteric overarching theme here to actually tying this together with life extension technologies and living forever and the punishment of death, basically?
Well, the Old Testament, remember, is all allegory of the rules that this system works by. That has nothing to do with real people. And Cain and Abel, one represents the nomadic type that follows his herd, that's Abel. He was able to do it, you know.
Exactly.
And you find that Cain could, but he was static. And the beginning of what they call civilization is the end of the nomadic life and the beginning of agriculture. That's what it means when you get people static together. Now they have homes. Now you can own the homes. Now you can own the farms. You can own the land.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a system coming in under the idea that they gave it a name of Cain. Cain means king. Cain means ruler, actually.
Yeah.
They used to use that in a school. Your ruler was made out of cane, by the way, you know, bamboo. And so you have the measuring of everything, the measuring, the weighing of everything through Cain. From Cain came king, and Kingu is what the ancient Mesopotamians called their king, Kingu, and Kingu, all these different variations of Cain. But Cain and Abel, Cain shows that he who had the will to kill off competition would become top. He'd become the top man.
Oh.
And that's what it really means. And you eat your enemy. In ancient times, you used to eat your enemy symbolically, and you took the power of that enemy into you. That was cannibalism. Cannibal.
Ah, there we go. Exactly. Wow, I haven't even thought about that. I was thinking about things like cocaine and sugar cane, you know, the drugs and all of that stuff, you know?
That's right. That's right. And that's why you get high. You measure the height. You get high on drugs.
Hmm.
And it's all related to the old mystery builders, the big builders of society. As I say, it's not real people in the Bible. It's an allegory of the system.
Mm-hmm. And it's an allegory that they are, that they're following, I guess, and that they're trying actually to implement on our level, or at least if there is mythologies in there, like the Book of Revelation and all this, this might be something that they're actually are trying to create here or striving for in one sense.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt that in Genesis, or the gene of Isis, you have a beginning. It starts with gene, the word gene, remember.
Exactly, yeah.
And we remember that. Never forget the word gene. And it tells you in there that there's a deity, right? A deity who creates first man and woman in chapter 1. In the perfect sameness, the magio, the perfect sameness as the God, meaning they were gods themselves. And in chapter 2, it tells you there was no one to till the soil. Now, the first one was called man and woman in the perfect sameness. Chapter 2, you have, there's no one to till the soil, so Adam, meaning earth, ruddy, red, and Eve were created. What it means is an allegory of a superior type that's ruled the world, who are like gods to themselves, as far as they're concerned, but they don't do the work. Adam and Eve, the commoners, do the work.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bible starts off with a class or caste system built right into it for those who understand it.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, exactly. There's so many connections here, again, going back to the Bible, and we've talked about this before, I guess. That.
And it also tells you, it told Adam and Eve to go out and replenish the earth, meaning it had been plenished or populated before this God came along.
Yeah, exactly. What's that all about? And even when Cain got his mark by God because he had slain Abel, he was afraid to go out in the land because he was afraid that he would be lynched, basically, because of what he had done. So, again, suggesting that there are more people out there, you know, the beasts out there. Exactly. And that might be even a kind of a reference to the, how should we put it, the the people or the humans that were around, what was around at that time, but weren't considered to be within this class that you talked about of Adam and Eve, the rulers, basically.
That's right. And so technically, you see, most folk are not men or women. They're descended from another species, as far as the elite are concerned, a lesser type of being, a human, as they call it. And even the word huma, from the earth, again, comes from that right red, ruddy, earthy.
Hmm. I thought that Hugh man stood for humble man. Do you know if that's true?
Well, I'd say the hum part is true. We're good worker bees. But it's really from the earth, from the humus. Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting thing. Hey, listen, I just wanted to return a little bit and talk about the ECFR again. Just mention a few of the members that are in there. Most of these guys I haven't heard about. This is, of course, the regular, I guess, politicians from around Europe, the former Finnish president Martti Ahtisaari and the current special UN envoy for Kosovo. One guy called Joschka Fischer is the former German foreign affairs minister. Well, I might get that wrong, I'm not sure. And former EU counterterrorism coordinator Timothy Garton-Ash. And one guy from Poland, foreign minister. But one interesting guy that they had in there, I guess the representative of the bankers or whatever, was George Soros. And he's got a good spot, I guess, in there.
That's right, the front man for the Rothschilds.
Yeah. So he'll be making decisions, I guess, on the economical plane and telling the other guys what is up and what is not with the economical vice, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, this thing so far ahead. And this is what Margaret Thatcher referred to in her speeches when she was touring the globe after she left as Prime Minister of Britain. And her lecture tours were entitled The New World Order. New World Order. And she said, we, all the ex-premiers and high politicians, meaning the high cabinet politicians, we have formed and are part of a parallel government, an unelected, previously elected, but unelected parallel government. We all know each other. We all work together towards a greater cause, a greater future. And now this is exactly what was brought up at the beginning of the 1900s in England, when the upper elite were complaining about this idea of democracy and that democracy with conflicting parties and bickering could never get anything done in a hurry because of all their arguing, and therefore they had decided to set up this Royal Institute for International Affairs, which would be a parallel government which would incorporate all the ex-prime ministers and presidents into it. That's what we have been living under. And Professor Carl Quigley, who was the historian for the CFR in America and who had access to all the records, wrote the two great books on it, The Anglo-American Establishment and Tragedy and Hope. And he said, and this in the 1960s, he said, we have been under this form of government, this parallel government, this secret government, for over 50 years.
Hmm. Yeah, there we go. Right from the horse's mouth, as it were.
Yeah.
Because I had a question about this a while back, actually. Someone who was, I guess, interested in these subjects and wanted to talk more. Do you have any good book recommendations beyond, I guess, the biographies of the big boys themselves are the best source, I guess, to kind of get it from the horse's mouth, as it were. But do you have any other good suggestions or recommendations for people who want to dive into further about this?
They have to go in to the books put out in 1944, 45, 46. By high politicians or ex-prime ministers. Lots of them came out in the Americas and in Britain at the time because they all belonged to this Royal Institute for International Affairs, CFR, and they all pushed books for global integration under a world government. They didn't get their way. They thought the public were ready to bow down after World War II.
Yeah.
But they were very cocksure themselves, so they published a lot of their findings. But They didn't get away with it, so they went quiet again, but worked steadily towards the integration secretly. There are stacks of books out there put out. I'd have to go through my list, though, to get them.
Yeah, maybe we can do that for a future program. We can go through some of those or some recommendations, if you have some, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. hey, listen, I just wanted to squeeze this in here. I saw recently a lecture by a guy that I currently don't remember his name, but he was talking about an organization called Common Purpose. Have you heard about this?
I have heard about it, yes.
This was a brief lecture that I watched, so I'm not that in tune with everything, what it's about and so forth, but this was basically, if I should boil it down, this was basically something that he referred to as some kind of mind, you know, manipulation, or even some kind of cult, basically, that trained politicians and different people in different kinds of authority positions to actually work against, of course, as the name implies, a common purpose. But what I found interesting in this was that they said that they set up the organization as a charitable organization. And
a foundation.
Okay, well, yeah, tell us about that, because he was referring to that there are actually different laws that goes in if you set it up as a charitable foundation.
Yes, you do. they have, number one, they have they can funnel large amounts of money into the foundation without taxation. Therefore, they're not subject to tax. They also get special exemption laws as far as disclosure of their bookkeeping, who they're giving it to, where the money comes from, or anything else. But if you go back into the writings of Albert Pike, for instance, he talked about, he said, we shall gain authority and power over everyone by using every means at our disposal, by collecting money by any means possible, including manipulation of the stock market, and then we shall become masters over the masters of the world. What he was referring to was the creation of great foundations,
mm-hmm.
and that's been reiterated again by other characters. Adam Weishaupt said the same thing: we shall create huge foundations, which then will put out charitable organizations, which will be political leader organizations in reality, and fund them heavily, and they would demand laws would get passed all in the line of our agenda, and that's what we have.
Exactly.
And they funded charitable institutions.
Wow, exactly. And he even mentioned, the guy that talked about this, the common purpose, that there are different specifications here in regards to what you actually have to keep track on, or I guess, you know, the bookkeeping, basically, on what is being said under the meetings. There are different laws here, meaning that they don't have to keep track on it in the same way. And what I thought about right away was that, hey, wait a minute, isn't Freemasonry kind of a charitable organization? This is one of the attributes that goes hand in hand with this, that you know, that they have a lot of charities to, if it's, you know, burn victims or give money to hospitals or whatever it might be. But a consequence of that then might be that there are different laws that this organization can go under. Do you think that's one of the main reasons why it's a charitable organization?
Yeah, you'd understand that all the occult have hidden behind good works from the very beginning. When the Knights Templars merged, they merged with the assassins, the Hashashin of the Middle East. There was the Arabic sect, a very old Arabic sect. They merged with the Old Man in the Mountain, and the Old Man in the Mountain used to run orphanages, massive orphanages. He'd take in the widow's sons and bring them all in and train them in a mountain retreat and call it paradise, and give them hashish and so on, women, everything they wanted, give them a good education, and set them out into the world to be advisors to other princes and caliphates and so on.
Yeah.
But when they were told, even 20 years later, if they assassinate someone, they would go and kill them. So they always hide behind charitable institutions, because it's very hard for the average person to see behind the charity and the con game that's going on behind the charity.
Hmm.
Now, I know people at the Rockefeller Foundation, And all these foundations work together. They're not unrelated. We find that the big foundations, the Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie, and a whole bunch of them, were heavily involved in the creation of the Nazi Party and the war machine. And those same families that ran the foundations made the big company IG Farben, the shell company that was Hitler's war machine.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys were never prosecuted, you know. And they're still running the show. Even the Bushes, Herbert Walker was involved in that Trading with the Enemy Act. He got off with it, though.
Of course.
But that's the Bush family. So all the present players we have in the U.S. and across the world were all funding the Nazi Party, strangely enough, in World War II. And now they run the big foundations as well, and they have their NGO leaders. Now, Mikhail Gorbachev, who was, remember, the premier of the Soviet Union, he'd been head of the KGB at one time, gave his parting speech to the Politburo when they were pulling down communism. And he said, shortly you'll hear that communism is dead, but don't believe it. We're simply expanding into the next phase. Well, at the same time he was saying that, Alvin Toffler came out with his book, The Third Way. Newt Gingrich was handing it out to congressmen on the congressional steps. And The Third Way was talking about the amalgamation of a bureaucratic communistic system to run the masses on behalf of the fascist elite at the top. So that's the merger of communism and capitalism, which it was designed to do in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. The two dichotomies come together and form the new. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I do know people who work inside the Rockefeller Foundation, and I know people who just do nothing but sign checks to these big these other charitable organizations.
Really?
Remember that the Soviet Union was run technically. By NGOs, non-governmental organizations, but the heads were picked by the Politburo, and they would demand from the government they pass laws on this and laws on that, and the government happily did so. That's the system they brought here, and the heads of these NGOs are given full-time salaries by the big foundations.
So tell us a little bit more about the non-governmental organizations. Is that something you said that this merged later, but what started up in Soviet Union then, or?
Yeah, in fact, that's what the Soviet Union. Soviet means that rule by councils.
Really?
NGOs. In other words, a pretense for the people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these non-governmental organizations like Mothers Against Drunk Driving, they get you used to getting stopped on the road when you didn't get stopped before by the police. Checkpoints, etc.
Mm-hmm.
It's all they all have ulterior purposes, but they pretend to speak on behalf of the public. Now, these NGOs, groups, these non-governmental organizations, are not elected by anybody. Remember,
We
don't vote for them. And under one of the big amalgamation treaties for the Americas, they had 3 years ago, for the first time, the big boys at the meeting says we'll have to bring in some of the NGO leaders to speak on behalf of the public. Well, that was the con there. I knew that was going to happen eventually, because the NGOs aren't elected by anybody. They're not democratic.
So this could be, this basically could be any kind of organization, and the only thing that that makes them, is the law that makes them an NGO. Is that it, or?
What it is acceptance and authorization of the United Nations. If
The
name of the organization is on the list, the accepted list of the UN, they're authorized by the UN.
Aha, I see. Okay. Yeah, there we go. That's nice. So this could be everything from even, I guess, lobby firms and stuff like that can be NGO, or is that wrong?
Mainly they come from the guise of helping the public, but really it's putting chains on the public. You have the international mayors of the World Society.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the mayors, you think your town mayor is elected by you? No. Once this guy's elected, he's now a member of the United Nations International Association, and he gets his newsletters and his agenda right from the UN. You have international educational authority groups, or parents groups for education, that belong to the UN, and they're unelected as well. They get their orders from the UN. Everything comes from the United Nations to standardize the world.
So this is applicable worldwide?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, sheesh, my God. Yeah, they definitely need to read up some of that. Non-governmental organizations, yeah, NGO. Hey, listen, I wanted to mention in this program here also, because we have something, an event, I guess, upcoming soon in the U.S., a exercise, actually. Something called Top of Four and Vigilante Shield 08. These are exercises that are designed to test official responses to the detonation of radiological dispersal device on U.S. territory. And of course, the exercise will be overseen by Dick Cheney, who will travel to Portland to coordinate all federal departments and agencies' response to these simulated attacks. What do you make of this? Again, we have the drills or the exercises. I don't know if I mentioned again, October 15th to 19th, this is going to occur. Anything to worry about? What's your thought on that?
It is one of the big tests to amalgamate. See, what you have now, they call it multi-jurisdictional task forces. That includes police, special units of police, military, special forces, even firemen, ambulance people, and even civilian groups within, again, society, the authorized civilian groups, who are all working together to see if they can contain whole cities and regions within the U.S. and Canada and Britain too. I think even Australia is participating in some places. So it's a lockdown, and it's not just to do with nuclear fallout, it's also to do with supposedly a plague that comes out, a pandemic, or even hurricane or something like that. So they're using anything that could possibly happen as a guise to try and lock down cities to see how all of these agencies can cooperate together. Now, these agencies first broke out this multi-jurisdictional task force idea and emergency preparedness back in the early 90s, 1990s in Europe. And they had practice drills in small towns across Canada. In 95, I saw one happening, and they had actors or volunteers acting as people who'd been hurt, and the military was there, police, ambulance, all the rest of it. And it's in a potato town in Canada. All they grow is spuds.
Okay.
And I said, "Well, what on earth is going on?" He says, "Oh, just in case there's a terrorist attack against Baxter Laboratories," which just happens to be one of the main inoculation laboratories that was involved with IG Farben.
Sheesh, really?
Going. And I thought, well, who on earth would want to blow up this place? And this is in 1995, long before 9/11. And then they gave us all booklets. All the people across the country were given these little booklets on emergency preparedness against all man-made or acts of God type disasters. So they were getting ready for it back then. Now you were simply seeing the whole dress rehearsal come into play. And I really think, you talk about the Georgia Guidestones and so on, I think that the plague idea is the perfect way to control and terrify society into compliance into the whole new agenda that's coming along. You can move people off the land, vast amounts of people. You can move them into the big cities for safety. You can quarantine whole areas if you wish to. There's so much they can do under the pretense of plague. That's what I really fear will come eventually.
Yeah, that's not good at all. The reason why I thought this was interesting also was if there is something in a name, it's that's what I kind of was triggered by, so to speak, here, the Vigilante Shield, because the one that Dick Cheney, the exercise that he oversaw during 9/11, was called Vigilant Guardian. So kind of eerily similarity there. So again,
well,
I don't know
if... Guardian class, according to Plato, that's what they call them, the Guardians.
Ah, okay.
So interesting that it uses that term. And the shield, of course, is a vigilant shield. Now, a shield is very vague. A shield is something that can stop incoming, but it can also stop those behind the shield from going forward. And I think what they're going to do is do contain the NATO. See, all NATO countries, every country that signed the NATO pact has been under this for 20 years. And the Man Alive series in Britain years ago did a documentary on a booklet that's supposed to be available to every European and Scandinavian.
Mm-hmm.
And it was what to do in times of emergency. And this thing was not available to the public. The Man Alive film crew got a copy. Most of it was blacked out, but what was left was bad enough. And under the laws of the NATO countries, if there's any radioactive or biological fallout in an area, then everyone in that area is to be completely contained. That's the only point of it, not to help them, but to contain them. Any people breaking out from a town or a city had to be shot on sight by the military, and large groups of people trying to flee have to be bombed from the air with, I think it's CS gas,
Sheesh.
Killed.
Really?
That's the NATO policy for containment.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, I guess they have this kind of attitude towards that, especially if there's some kind of plague. I mean, even if this is artificially induced, as it were, or not, I guess that their policy to this, to prevent spreading or whatever, is to be basically how ruthless they ever can be, you know?
Yeah, but it's amazing down through history. I always say, you know, you can read books put out by big players in the political field where they outline what they'd like to see happen in an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see all these strange things actually happening. Well, how come every time it's all a coincidence, they get what they want?
Mm-hmm.
You never find anything happening outside of their control in a natural disaster or anything that aids anybody else. Everything happens to aid their agenda on cue, even the 9/11 deal.
Yeah.
They wrote about it in the 90s. They needed something on the scale of Pearl Harbor to get this war started in the Middle East. And lo and behold, they get their wish.
That's right.
I mean, these guys are the luckiest characters I have ever heard of.
Well, you know, that's why they're our leaders. You know, they're lucky. That's it.
Yeah, so that's the whole key to it. And this pandemic idea would be the greatest way to completely change society, especially when you remember Rumsfeld when he said this war might take 100 years. He's talking about the complete alteration of the entire system of society into a new system.
And even just the threat of a plague type virus going around, I think that would be enough.
Sure, that's why they gave us the predictive programming of movies like Outbreak and all the subsequent ones that came out afterwards. All they'll have to do is show you a couple of guys in these suits, biological suits, carrying a stretcher, tell you there's a plague, and be on TV, so it must be true, and we'll all panic.
Sheesh.
It's like the mad cow fiasco.
Yeah.
For the mad cow fiasco, they showed you the same one cow staggering across a road in a barn, towards a barn, the same one cow, the same shot over and over again. You never saw any other mad cows.
Really? I didn't think about that. Yeah. That's a good point. What do you think the agenda is there? Because I read recently that they were trying to get it more popular for people to go away from the meat diet and so forth. Do you think that's...
It was Alvin Toffler's book. Alvin Toffler again.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who did the Third Way, the one that Newt Gingrich was handing out. Now, Newt Gingrich, remember, is the guy who opens up the Loyola meetings at Loyola University for world scientists to do with the brain chip.
Okay.
It became Newt Gingrich. He was handing out that Third Way. In that book by Alvin Toffler, it says, we shall create a vegetarian world, and it must be so. He doesn't tell you why it must be so. He says it must be so.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. Exactly. So it's all these kinds of on every small little level there are these ideas on where to steer people into, even if it's they implement it through a fashion or through a threat or whatever it might be. But
New Age too. It's been pushed through the New Age for a long time. Vegetarianism.
Sure.
And yet they copied that from the Brahmanistic idea of India, because the Brahmins advocated that for a religion. And the public accepted it, and you see the malnourished, very thin and stunted growth, not too bright people at the bottom there have been brought up in a very, not just a vegetarian diet, it's also a restricted type of vegetarian diet.
Mm-hmm.
Because once they've got you all vegetarian, now you're on the modified vegetables, that's all they will allow. and gradually they'll exclude certain types of proteins from your meals, so you can't even get beans anymore.
Hmm. Well, yeah, exactly. That's the other side to all of this, that you have the GMO being implemented on this level too, which of course, you know, everything from basically poisons you and changes even your DNA to actually, you know, being more, you know, not enough nutrition basically in the food itself. So that's a high, you know, risk, as it were, that I see.
In all warfare, you go for the main infrastructure. Food is first, and water.
Hmm.
Food,
yeah,
and water. Down through thousands of years, go for the food and the water.
Mm-hmm.
And when you realize that what they use, and they use this in fish too, I saw a program on television here from the Ministry of Fisheries in Canada, and they had these water troughs going past people, workers standing next to these little, very small machines, and they picked up a fish every couple of seconds, just touched it against this little thing, which used insufflation, like the Star Trek device for injections. It doesn't break the skin,
mm-hmm,
but it gives a high force through, and it forces through E. coli, which is used to go in deep within the DNA, and the E. coli carries the new DNA structure, and therefore when every cell of that fish dies off, as all cells do, and it is renewing, the new DNA attached to the E. coli takes over and then completely recreates the fish.
Hmm.
They've been doing this for years, and here we are getting all these modified foods, still with the same DNA structure attached with all the different coli inside it, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They're still active, and we're being bioengineered.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a scary thought, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, that's why I also think that actually growing your own food and actually... again, you know, learning how to plant something, how to grow something, becoming more in tune with nature. This is, I see this as a kind of a key part, a key component to all of, you know, the information and learning about all of this stuff. Also, learning how to plant and how to grow something. I think that's one of the best things you actually could do in a time like this. What do you think?
In a time like this? There's no doubt about it, although I do see the day where they'll forbid you to even have a garden.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll call it antisocial if you're trying to feed yourself. In the system that's coming up, you're supposed to be interdependent.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And that's going to be law. Yeah,
mm. Yeah, and people are going to demand it too. Yeah, sure.
You'll find the city people will. They're the easiest ones to go along with. You know.
Exactly, exactly. But still, we have... we're not at that level, and people still can own land, fortunately, and we can still grow our own food, and that's I think that's a good idea, something to strive for.
And get a hold of the old unmodified seeds. There are a few companies left that as far as we know,
mm-hmm,
they have the unmodified seeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have to hook up with some of the indigenous people somewhere. Get the, like the CIA did, I think, when they bought some seeds from the native Indians when they were going to store seeds in one of their underground facilities, and then they didn't went for the, you know, the supermall seeds or whatever. They got to the real source, you know, the Native Americans, and bought corn seeds from them.
Yes. What you have to understand is, see, the public of the world are under attack. It's a war. It's a total war we're under. You have to realize that for the first time and really snap out of it.
Mm.
Big companies like Monsanto made secret deals with the Canadian government. I have no doubt they did it with other governments too. To test out the GMO foods on the Canadian public without the consent or knowledge of the Canadian public. That's been admitted to now in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all guinea pigs. And how could a democratically elected government, it shows you you're not democratic, you see, how could they possibly enter into a secret deal with a corporation, an international corporation, to test out the main, most important thing in your life, apart from water, is food for survival. But they did it for 10 years before it broke out from Britain by chance that we were the guinea pigs.
Hmm.
And so we're not under democracy. And what you've got to realize is... Monsanto and the big boys, who are obviously authorized by the same high group in the world to be the front leaders in this. Monsanto has been grabbing all of the grain and seed of pretty well everything that had never been patented before, and using a loophole which they made sure was in the law, because the law system works for them too. Because it hadn't been patented before, no one had thought, they just passed seeds on for hundreds and hundreds of years. They're putting patents on all the existing seed, including the unmodified stuff. So when you start to get that seed and grow it, they can come on your land and say, hey, that's our seed, we own the patents to that. You have no right to grow that stuff.
Really? And the original stuff too? I thought it was just the seeds that, or the plants that they actually change something in.
For 5 years now, I mean, every day there's dozens of varieties of seeds simply haven't been patented. They're doing it every day.
Really? Sheesh, yeah, there we go. So I can demand interest on that later.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Yeah, exactly.
So we're under world attack here.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know, Alan, I just want to run this by you before we run things up here for this time. Al Gore, huh? Winning the Nobel Prize. What do you think about that?
The gory man, eh? Yeah. Well, the gory man there didn't surprise me because... his father and ones before him were basically trained by Armand Hammer. Armand Hammer was a big player for the elite in his day. He had his own offices across from the White House, and he also had his own offices in the Kremlin, of all places, next door to Lenin and then Stalin.
Great.
So these families, again, these international families, are all part of the high occultic groups. Well interbred, not too bright Al Gore, but he's given this job.
Yeah.
As long as he reads his lines and has his ghostwriters write the books for him, he'll be okay. But the idea is not his idea, it's an old idea, and sure, they're going to promote the green, green, green. Remember, red is labor and revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Blue is conservative. Look at the ties they wear at election time. Green is the Green Party. These are all Masonic lodges.
The coloring again, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you got blue, red, green, and so on.
How about, you're speaking here of colors, how about the orange, the color orange?
Orange is a new infusion of two colors. However, orange also goes back to the royal families of Europe, especially Britain too, because they still have one of their main bases at The Hague in Holland, the Netherlands, and it's called the Free State of Orange. That's where the international court is right now for the UN. That's where the Kaiser Wilhelm went after World War One.
Mm-hmm.
He was never brought up in charges. He went to there because they have international free status, just like the Vatican. They can't touch them.
Huh. Free State of Orange, was that the name?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Free State, yeah.
Interesting.
And also the main radical group to fight Catholicism for Britain, it's called the Orange Lodge, the Masonic Lodge. It's a lodge too, so you're red, orange, green, blue, and so on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm thinking even of William of Orange.
Yeah, that's right. King Billy, they called him too, because he came right over from that particular state, Orange Free State in the Netherlands.
Sheesh, yep, there we go. Very interesting. Yeah, exactly. And again, Al, I want to thank you for coming on the program again. I think it's a good time to round things up here for this time. It's always a pleasure to have you on. It's always very knowledgeable discussing the things that we do. And as usual, I want to leave the last few minutes, the floor open, as it were, to you, so you can talk a little bit about your website and promote the books and CDs and stuff that you have out there.
Yes, look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com for lots of free downloads on all the various topics in the history of all these things we're discussing today and much, much more. And look into the European site, Alan Watt Sentient Sentinel.eu, for transcripts available in other languages.
Excellent. Cuttingthroughthematrix.com, that's the main website. Alan Watt, thank you again for coming on, and looking forward to speaking with you again.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in to Red Ice Creations Radio. Don't miss our program this Thursday. We have Jay Widener coming back to the show to talk about his new film projects and much, much more. The website is redicecreations.com. Until next time, upwards and onwards. Take good care of yourself.
out around